This meeting is now being recorded.
Great. Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Subteam Track 4 IDN's Technical and Operations Call held on Thursday, the 1st of March, 2018. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you're currently only on the audio bridge, would you please let yourself be known now? Okay. Hearing no names, I would like to remind everyone to please state your name before speaking for recording purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. And with this, I will turn it back over to Cheryl Langdon Orr. Please begin.
Thank you very much, Julie, and thank you to all of those of you who have joined in today's call. My name's Cheryl Langdon Orr. I'm one of the co-leads on this work track, and Rubens will be taking us through part of the agenda today, but I will be getting us started. On today's agenda, as you can see on the slide, we're doing our usual administrivia, which I'm digging into now. We're going to take a very reasonably brief look at the path to the initial report, concern to some of you I know, and then we're going to get into the registry system testing topic, and there's quite a lot of work for us to look at where we are on those issues, and then a brief call for any other business. But if anyone has any other business right now that they'd like to let us know about, pop it into chat or raise your hand, and we'll ensure that we have enough time left to do that. With that, let me ask if there is anyone who has any update to their statements of interest that needs to be made. Not hearing anybody and not seeing anyone raise their hand in the Adobe Connect room, and welcoming Jeff. Jeff, you said you'd be 10 minutes late on the call. I was almost about to note your partial apologies, but now I can just do a welcome. And excellent timing, Jeff, because you may wish to come into our next topic. If we can progress the slide now. Take to the next slide. Or release it and we can all do our own. They're unsynced. Well, not in mine. Sorry. I have now got to click to full screen on my tablet, so I won't see anybody's hands up. Very annoying. Okay. If you move to slide 4, thanks very much. And we're going to have a brief discussion on the path to initial report. Initial report, of course, all of you are aware of our very aggressive timeline that we've had published and discussed since our last ICANN 60 meeting. We would like to ensure that our face-to-face time in San Juan is as productive as possible. And we will be in most of the work tracks, including on a very important matter here that Rubens can speak to if you like, but it has been advertised in the recent email exchanges between Rubens and some of the membership of our work track. We will be wanting to hone in on particular possible recommendations, and where there is no consensus on recommendation or questions to be answered, take that to take part of the initial report we're putting together. There is an initial report template that is utilised by GNSO. We will be, with some minor variation, running with that template. So any of you who are familiar with any other process of the PDP should feel comforted by that. There is a number of documents from various work tracks, ours included, that are in a form of either heavy text documentation or summary documents in slides and on Google Docs. And these are still being brought across in a format fair or reasonable, some of it smoother and more polished than others, into the initial report template. It is our intention, as I indicated last week and the week before that based on our agreements from all of the work track leads in our leadership synchronisation weekly meetings, we would be releasing that for general comment, noting it will be a very preliminary draft working document as soon as possible. It's our hope with the pressure on our fantastic support staff being rather high at the moment. It may be that it isn't until the end of the weekend or the beginning of next week, but it is an effort to make it as soon as possible and to ensure that everyone from all of the work tracks have it available well in advance to them getting on planes next week if they're travelling to ICANN 61. From a work track 4 perspective, I think it's important for us to understand that we will be applying a sort of a regularised process for what gets into the initial report. In other words, if some particular discussion has come up with a clear consensus and a recommendation, that obviously goes in as a recommendation from our work track into the report. But of course, public comment is still able to be taken and reacted to on that. If it's something with a significant amount of support, in other words, if one looked at the places within ICANN or even within the GNSO that a particular view was coming from, and two or three people or entities, people or entities were supportive of an idea or concept as a recommendation, then that would go in as a clearly posed question for public comment. So what that means, just to be clear, that if Alan Greenberg, myself, and one other person who is clearly in representation mode of the at-large community all have one view and the rest of the view in Work Track 4 is of an opposite prevailing view, then it would be unlikely that that, in inverted commas, ALAC and at-large view would be posed as a question, but it would, of course, be able to be appended, as all minority views are, to the final report. So hopefully that gives you a clear understanding of how we will be triaging what goes in terms of recommendations and questions. So with that, Jeff, if you want to speak to any part of the pathway to the initial report, or Steve, I'd welcome that now. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks. I think this is Jeff Newman. You did a good job explaining it. I just want to just reiterate that a lot of the initial report is going to be presenting the different options on the table without necessarily recommendations if we're not all on the same page and don't have recommendations. So please review that material when you have access to it in order to make sure your viewpoints are expressed in there and that the proposed questions for public comment include questions on your particular point of view on certain issues. So just to keep us honest, we're doing the best we can to kind of get this drafted up and out there, but we're only human and we may miss things, so keep us honest. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. And before I go to Steve, I do want to recognize the extreme pressure that this particular exercise is putting on Steve and his staff. And we do appreciate the fact that they are also only human, as you, Steve.
Thanks very much, Cheryl. This is Steve Chan from staff. And I just wanted to add one clarification that if we are able to achieve the delivery of, you know, this working document of the initial report, it's really going to be just the excerpt of the bulk and meat of the report, which is around the deliberations and then recommendations to the extent they exist, as well as the options and questions we want to ask. So there's a number of additional parts to the GNSO initial report template that at this point we're not going to concentrate on. A lot of those things will actually be informed by the concentration on the section that we're working on right now. So for instance, the executive summary is something we'll work on the end. All the annexes and things like that, those will come at the end as we dot the I's and T's and things like that and cross the T's. There's also a section on just a high-level summary of all the recommendations and things like that. And so, again, all those things will funnel out of the meat of the report that we'll be working on initially. So just wanted to add that clarification of that. If we're able to share this next week, it's going to be concentrated on a certain part of the report. Thanks.
Thank you, Steve. Certainly the work track leads from all five, all four of these in this issue recognize that, and we want to do make sure that our work track members also understand that whilst we appreciate zealous, keen and enthusiastic editorial and commenting from everyone, the boilerplate stuff at this stage is exactly that, boilerplate, and we will be picking it up later. So dotting of the I's, crossing of the T's, text suggestions, comments, and creative and positive criticism should be limited to the meat of it, which is our specific work track recommendations. And again, do recognise that each work track has a significant body of work in various forms to try and bring across and bludgeon into some form of a final documentation. And to that end, final form, format and editing will be done much later in the process, probably later in this month and early April. So with that, is there any questions on that before we move to the main event for today? Not seeing anybody's hands, over to you, Rubens, and if you'll progress yourselves to slide 5 and then move on to slide 6, we're into the registry system testing. Thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl. Rubens, keep for the transcript. Today we'll be discussing thing that was previously known as pre-delegation testing, or PDT, and most people still know that by PDT, but some months ago I can change its name to registry system testing to accommodate that most of the testing that is now done is with already delegated strings, not with not yet delegated strings. If you go to slide 6, you see that the applicable GNSO guidance on the registry system testing structures. I won't read them all because the Principle D, Principle E, Recommendation 4, and Recommendation 7 basically says don't break the Internet. So the motto here, don't break the Internet. Recommendation 9 is about transparency, applying economic process to the selection of TLDs, and recommendation is about IDNs, restricting IDNs from its full spectrum of technical capabilities to only what is allowed in our Canadian guidelines, which one needs to avoid user confusion. So this is the context that we have to operate. So if you go to slide 7, we can see why it's now called RST, Registry System Testing, not PDT anymore, because it has a PDT lag. It has one aspect of testing, not yet delegated strings. It's also being used to test when TLD is changing, Registry Service Providers, RSPs, and possible other tests like IDN review and test registry service provider for the first time if it hasn't been tested before. One should know that these specific tests are not all equal. For instance, data escrow test is not a test that if someone sends the escrow to the escrow provider. It's actually an escrow file. It's just testing that you can generate the escrow file, but has to submit the escrow to the testing service. While DNS, EPP, IDN, and DNS, EPP, and WHOIS are actual operational tests. They actually try to do DNS lookups, WHOIS queries, and see if that registry is operating correctly for that TLD. IDN is a bit of a mix because it has both an operational part of the test and a review of the IDN tables by the RSC provider. And there is one area mentioned here as only documentation that there's a lot of self-certification documents when a registry says, oh, I tested my load up to that many requests per second, up to that many domains, up to that many queries per second. And actually most of the of what is described in the guidebook were mostly about self-certification, although I can ended up going to a more operational nature of testing throughout the process. So this is where we are. If you go to slide 8, we have there what were the issues that some stakeholders found in the system. The first list is from ICANN policy research area, which is the program implementation review report, and they focused on three issues. One, they suggested to review the requirements for self-certifying tests and how they were effective. So should that be changed for SLA monitoring instead of self-certification? Or should go to the other direction, should have an actual operational test instead of a self-certification? That's the question they posed in the implementation review report. They agreed that the effectiveness of the process wasn't much high because, and they agreed that some optimizations could be done that was inefficient to test every TLD. And they also made a small mention that reviewing of the IDN table should be limited to complying with the specific TLD IDN policy instead of the full IDN guidelines. These were the three issues that were highlighted in the report. And from, I collected some opinions from registries. All of them were made public, but not in a single document. All of them were comments by one or more registries or the stakeholder group in many opportunities. They usually criticized repeated evaluation of identical documents. So if there is an RSP serving 200 TLDs, the provider would evaluate that same documentation for each TLD, at least in theory. We don't know if they actually did that. Registries criticized the repeated testing of the same infrastructure, but the same infrastructure would be tested over and over again. If the approximately the same test, so the expectation of failure in this case should be low, but still they were tested. Because I can apply a somewhat isonomic criteria between delegation and post-transition changes, they exercise this criteria for every time some TLD changed the RSP, and that added time to that RSP change and added cost, and not only the cost to pay, but the cost of having a slow transition, and so it's a loss of possible loss of revenue if that change takes so long. And from a recent communication that the stakeholder group sent to us, registries mostly opposed to the idea of accrediting or certifying insurance providers, although they haven't opposed and seem somewhat in favor, although not consensually in favor, of an RSP pre-approval program. I mentioned this specific item, although not directly related to RSP, because other work tracks in subsequent procedures identify this possible connection between the RSP programs and testing, and that would impact and re-element this, for defining RSP. So that's what the main stakeholders in that process, which was the item or the one that passed for PBT, mentioned. But we have also asked technical services a while ago how it could be, the registry testing could be improved in order to prevent events such as the failures, service level failures that even crossed Eberle thresholds, even though not generating an Eberle transition. And we asked them what could be improved. And the problem with asking is that people actually answer your questions, and they gave us a very large answer, very long answer. They recommended doing more operational tests in PDT, or now RST, system testing, including some scenarios linked to DNSSEC, like key rollover, resigning the full zoom, that they saw as scenarios where some TLD failed along the years of operation, and they recommended doing those tests of those scenarios in PDT, somewhat like a fire drill for these conditions. They recommended using ongoing monitoring to predict potential performance issues. So ICANN could rely on lack of failure in monitoring either to allow an RSP to operate, or if there are repeated service level breaches, that could result in stricter penalties for registry operators and or registry service providers. If you go to slide 10, we have two more of their recommendations to require certifications and or minimal standards, mostly third-party certifications like ITU, quality certifications like quality and information certifications like ISO, information certifications like CASP, SOC. They actually added that it was not actually part of the registry testing, but that was one of the suggestions. They recommended periodic audits of registry provider operations, so RSPs would be continuously audited. If anyone has a doubt about what the recommendation means, please raise your hand. We have a slide later in the deck for discussing the recommendations, but if someone has a doubt of what it means, please raise it as soon as feasible, and we can clarify that. So if you go to slide 11, they also recommended RSP pre-approval that they thought could improve the process, make it more efficient, which is something that all the work tracks have been working and seems to be a mostly consensual topic. Maxim has his hand in. Please go ahead, Maxim.
Maxim Alzoba, for the record. I'd like to just spend 1 or 2 minutes on the idea of required certifications, because currently the back-end operations is mostly technical side of things, because all build is left on registry side of things. And ISO certification, which actually just a certification, some kind of process in place, they don't have many points of overlap with the DNS service provider, I'd say. So since we do not have any kind of correlations between stability of DNS backend and the ISO certification, it's a bit questionable, and frankly saying, it makes barrier quite high. So companies from developing countries and also small medium companies, which are quite efficient in from technical point of view, will be just beyond the barrier. They will not be able to have proper certification, for example, some kind of certification for top management. It costs money, actually, and not all companies can deliver proper services, can afford this. Thanks.
Thanks, Maxim. Taking my co-chair hat off, I fully agree with you, but I'm just presenting what they are suggesting. But taking my co-chair hat back on, we can then go to slide 12, where we have two more of ICANN technical service recommendations. They recommend to conduct some tests once per service provider and others for each CLD, because some of the tests were actually redundant and made for each and every CLD. So they recommended making that separation. And they also recommended removing the IDN table review from PDT. So they thought that this review wasn't worthwhile in that process. And what they are actually bringing to light is that this was some, even a level of evaluation, so it should probably have been done at registry service evaluation and not at at the pre-delegation process. So that's an interesting comment they had. And if you go to slide 13, that's the last two of their recommendations. They recommend to consider the number of TLDs and expected registrations for using RST infrastructure, some kind of tiering mechanism or something that would think, oh, this RSP is capable of this or that capacity. And they also recommended to incorporate most existing questions into RSP evaluation. So most of the technical questions would now become part of the RSP evaluation question. So most of the RSPs already approved for 2012 will likely have little effort to become RSP pre-approved. Possibly there are some details that we need to be sorted out, but most of the evaluation were already done. So these were their suggestions. And at slide 14, I selected what appears to be convergence between what policy research, technical services, and registries comment on this. The first thing that most of them seem to support the idea of splitting testing between tests or questions or issues that are applied to the whole service provider or to specific TLDs in order to avoid redundancies. It seems to have a, there seems to have a support of remove most of all self-certification assessment and move towards operational tests of actually testing things, or if not tested, leave that to SLA monitoring down the road, which is the third suggestion, to rely on SLA monitoring for most of ISP testing, if not all, but possibly a good part of ISP testing could be relied upon SLA monitoring. Most comments, including the PIR report and technical service, suggesting limiting IBM testing to the specific policy of the TLD, not to the general IBM guidelines, and even policy research, technical services, and registries seem to have seem to be fond of an ISP pre-approval program, which is different from ISP certification program or accreditation program or anything that would have ISP would have a contract with ICANN. So these five items seems to be the general agreement between those three stakeholders commenting. One issue that we couldn't find more stakeholder comments than other stakeholder groups and constituencies in that area, possibly because it's something very specific. But we have the opportunity in the public comments for the initial report for them to post comments if we couldn't get their opinion until now. But if you go to slide 15, that's where things get interesting, because some of the recommendations from ICANN Technical Services are not convergent with either or other ICANN suggestions or Harris suggestions. One is IBM testing, where technical service suggesting ditching the review altogether, not having it. The implementation report didn't. Although the implementation report is 1 to 2 years, perhaps even 3 years older than the more recent technical service suggestions. So they might have been through a learning curve and preferred that option after that period of time. We have a question from Maxim. Please go ahead, Maxim.
Maxim Alzoba, for the record. Actually, additional note about the stricter SLAs. With in conversations between the registries and ICANN, actually, it was not shown why ICANN wants to make worse SLAs. The reason is, if you check from mathematical point of view, if you lower the barrier of what bet, you actually make situation worse. So it's something which was discussed, but as I understand, we didn't have answer from ICANN why. And the examples provided were they were discussed separately. And they, mostly it were new TLDs not in full operation. Thanks.
Thanks, Maxim. Since you move it to that item, we can discuss that item. We'll go back to the other items in the slide later. I believe item meant that they would like something in repeated service level breaches, not in overall singular event. One other thing is that a contract today doesn't have any possible penalties besides terminating the agreement. So one of the problems that ICANN has, it only has the option either to say, oh, okay, that was a failure, so actually don't apply any penalty at all, or applying the nuclear options of terminating the agreement. So they might want some grade of possible penalties, like either monetary or possibly something else. They might have option of lesser penalty than terminating the agreement. And I see you have your hand raised again. Go ahead.
Maxim Alzoba, for the record. Actually, even the definition of breach was questioned, because from ICANN point of view, as I understand, all situations where the SLAs registries have some allowance in minutes for particular services of how many minutes per week they can be offline, for example. And for everything which is not DNS service itself, for example, whois can be offline for a few hours and things like that. They see, or at least it's not clear if they see the allowed breach, allowed triggered events as a breach or not. Because in discussions, it was not clear from the suggested text that it's not, the conversations were only about situations where SLAs were like 100% failure by the definition of contract and not the some triggered event which was allowed by the text of the contract. Thanks.
Thanks, Maxim. I read the personal experience that most of the time they alleged the tax service level breaches, not all the times there is actually a breach. Sometimes there is a breach in the SLA system, monitoring system, not in the monitoring. So that has the problem of who watches the watchers going all along. One other recommendation technical service had was to do additional operational tests. They mentioned specifically key rollover and zoom resigning, both DNSSEC tasks that actually some registries have failed that. So this is a very interesting piece of experience because it's real-world experience. Those things actually happened. Those TLDs actually had the problem and that was actually fixed in a day or so, but incurred in some downtime for those registries. Other recommendation that is not converted third-party certifications of registry operators as providers. Maxim already covered some criticisms of that. They also recommended periodic RFP audits, which is kind of odd because that's how ICANN compliance operates today. Today they actually select TLDs based on getting new RFPs that weren't previously tested. So even though their allowance is for 2 audits per year per TLD, they usually don't do that. They usually much less than that. So they are actually citing through RFPs in those audits. So to me, it sounds more like a suggestion for ICANN compliance to follow than for us to discuss into a policy forum such as PDT. Technical services also recommended stricter penalties for repeated SLA breaches. You already covered a bit of that. And they also recommend consideration of number of TLDs per health service provider, which is somewhat problematic because there are TLDs of every type. If you have 10,000 TLDs that are brand TLDs that don't get one registration a day, it's very different than even having one TLD that is launched in the market and has get 1 million registrations. It also doesn't address that most system capacity failures are dependent on number of requests, not number of objects. So if you have million domain names in your zone, and someone tries to register 100 million domain names more in your zone in a matter of minutes or hours, that system will have a problem. Doesn't matter if it already has that amount of records before. So it tries to look into a static view of the problem when most of the failures occur in a dynamic environment, like some launches of new GTLDs where the registration volume was so high that not registration in quantity, but in registrations per second, and that registry end up having failures and recovering from those failures later. But those are very difficult to measure. I think one of the reasons that they might mention the number of TLDs because that's easy to measure, and I don't think we should do that. We need to look at what matters. If we can measure that, we need to try to find proxies for that measure, not measuring something only because it's easy to do. As someone said one day, let's go to the moon because it's hard, not because it's easy. Of those six non-convergent recommendations, it sounds like possibly the additional operational testing was something that people would mostly agree, even though they were the ones, the only ones that suggested that. And the other ones look like very controversial. So do you have any support or opposition for any of those six recommendations that only technical services made regarding this topic? That gives people some time to think. Maxim, please go ahead.
Maxim Alzoba, I'm not sure if we mentioned that it was another conversation about RSPs, about the legal framework. Currently, RSPs are subcontractors of a registry. And, for example, to have an audit of RSP, you have to have relationships with them. And the idea wasn't fully supported. Because, for example, in case of emergency, having another third-party contracted actually adds issues and not makes life simpler. Thanks.
Thanks, Maxim. Although not directly mentioned, I think that was covered in the Harris's comment regarding RSP program of not going to accreditation and certification that would in turn allow this kind of RSP audit. And if there is another contracted party, it might have even to change some of the GNSO structures to accommodate that, RSP house or registry stakeholder group with RSP constituency that really sounds complicated. So unless people really feel very compelled to follow that level of complication, I don't. So people are typing, and before we move on, let's just see what they have to say before closing this matter. Alan, if you prefer talking instead of typing, Alan mentioned that surely all registers provided would also be registered in their own right. Actually, I believe that there is one that's not, which is CentralNIC. CentralNIC is actually registered for a good number of TLDs, including large CIDs like XYZ, and I don't think they are a contracted party of as a registrar. They are a contracted party as a registrar. So even in the GPLD space, there are some, not non-hybrid that are either RSP or either only registrar operators. So since we covered the topic, we now go back to Cheryl and slide 16. Go ahead, Cheryl.
Thank you very much, Rubens. And here we do the any other business again and closing. One of the things I would like to also remind you is that we will have a 45-minute block of time during our next meeting, which is listed here on slide 16. PDP subpro working group time is from 12:15 on the 10th of March through to 4:15 local time on the 10th of March. And we can assume, as usual, being number four, we'll be at the end. if you go back 45 minutes prior to 4:15, so at the 3:30 mark, if my maths is my clock working is right, but staff can be double checking me with my fuzzy head at the moment, then that'll be when our WorkTrack 4 session should, of course, assuming 1, 2, and 3 go on time. I must admit, Rubens, it would be nice for them to do 4, 3, 2, 1 for a change. We wouldn't have our time compressed. Perhaps we can propose that to the other co-leads. And Emily's saying it's 12:15 to 3:00. So under those circumstances, this slide does need to be adjusted. And regardless, whenever that session finishes, if we're at the end, we'll be on the last 45 minutes or less, as is typical. Or if we can prevail with the suggestion from Rubens that we go in reverse order, 4, 3, 2, 1, we'll be up first. But we will let you know on the list as soon as that is settled. But at the moment, assume that we will be in the last part of that session. So with that, we have 10 more minutes if anyone does want to raise any other business or outstanding issues, or make any comments about our preparation for ICAST 61. Anne, yes, go ahead.
Yes, thanks, Cheryl. I did appreciate the explanation in the beginning regarding issues that will and will not appear in the draft initial report that will be circulated prior to the meeting. There was part of it I didn't quite understand, because it seemed to say that, well, if you express an opinion in a representative capacity, that's going to make it into the initial report. But if it's, you know, just something that's been noted, you know, by one person or one or two people, you know, it may not show up in the report. Now, I guess the issue I have there is I know, of course, I've been quite vocal on three issues that were covered in a call back in November. And the question that I have about that is that all along in the process, I was told that these issues would be raised for further discussion. But now it kind of sounds like, well, you know, those are only important to Anne, so we're not going to put them in the initial report. And so I feel like that this process is kind of flawed or something. I don't know. It's just we've never discussed the things that it was, you know, that we said that we would come back to, including the three straw models. But so I'm just not sure what's going on.
Thank you, Anne. And I'm very sorry and indeed disappointed that you feel that process is at fault here. But I'm going to recognize Jeff in a moment who will go on further. And I'm not going to go into what doesn't have substantive discussion. And remember, we are not finalising the final report now. But for example, if only one individual's opinion is not getting any even pro forma support to be in the report, then I think there is a strong case for that to be a minority opinion that comes in
at the final report regardless. However, that opinion, of course, also can be raised in the ordinary public comment mechanism as well, which will ensure that that triggers the work track discussion if indeed it hasn't happened before the initial report. So I'm not too terrified that due process for everyone's opinion is not going to be looked at. But if you have significant support, I don't think anyone has a question that should go in as a proposal for public comment to be drawn on. If you have only a small amount of support, then that would be up to the work track to look to that. And I don't think we should ever think that it's just any one person's view, whether that is representational or otherwise. What we don't want to have happen is, for example, a particular part of ICANN. Let me use the Government Advisory Committee as an example. And if, you know, seven individuals become vociferous on one specific thing and the rest of a work track is not in sync with that as an issue, then we have to look at, is that a GAC view? If so, then that is a single voice. Or is it seven individuals' views? So that's the type of balancing that we would want to be doing when we're planning material to go in as questions for public comment. Jeff, over to you.
Yeah, I think I'd like to adopt the practical approach, and let's go through the materials, and if you feel like something's been left out, and that kind of raises at the beginning, I want to try to capture in this initial report everyone's views. So while I appreciate the question in the abstract, let's actually get down to the writing and get down to the concepts before we kind of express a little bit of concern, because I'm of the view, at least for this initial report, that most issues don't just have one person that is pushing a particular position, and that where there's one person, there might be others behind them. So the key is to make sure that we have the different positions documented and that we can tailor questions to the rest of the community to get input on all of the different options. So let's make sure that as we write these things up, that you feel like your views are in there in some way.
Well, great. That's very reassuring, Jeff. I thank you. I think my concern about the process actually just had been that there was an indication as I was writing that there would be more discussion on those issues and on the straw models in particular. And so that's the part where the timing got a little strange. So and I can appreciate there are certainly plenty of topics to be covered here, but those seem to be sort of, you know, simple, unresolved, and discussion was not concluded as to what the views were within the work track. Still to be defined, if you will. But thank you. We'll just look at the draft report.
Thank you, Anne. And correct me if I'm wrong, Cheryl, for the record, correct me if I'm wrong, Ruben, but aren't we planning to further that discussion specifically in part of our agenda for our work track in ICANN 61?
Ruben's here. Exactly. Privacy Services is the topic selected for face-to-face discussions in San Juan.
Thank you. Ruben, so I appreciate that. I did think I had it right, and that's why I wasn't as concerned about the process. So, Anne, to be clear, as I thought I had read in the email traffic, the straw models are exactly one of the major matters that we will be discussing in our face-to-face meeting in San Juan, so it's an ideal opportunity to ascertain levels of support, and in fact with a wider audience than we traditionally get with our meagre WorkTrack membership that isn't staff and that isn't WorkTrack leaders in these calls.
Great, Cheryl. Thank you.
No problem. Okay, I mean, I was beginning to think I hadn't read it and just hoped it, but it has apparently been writ. So with that, we're almost to the top of the hour, and if there is no other comments from anyone, I can just see if anyone wants to raise their hand. Nope. Okay. On behalf of Ruben and I, I'd like to, and indeed Jeff, I'd like to wish you all very safe travels if you're heading to ICANN 61. And I'm certain that we will be able to progress in a constructive and collegiate way all of our work for this work track, at least a little bit further, when we gather for the session on the 10th of March. And we will let the list know whether or not all of the work track leaders will agree to a reversal of order. So for once, work track 4 may be able to be the kickoff in the time slot, and so not have its 45 minutes eaten up by the others. With that, thank you one and all, and bye for now.
Great. Thanks, everyone. Today's meeting is adjourned. You can disconnect all lines and have a good rest of your day or night.